When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks, everyone, for jumping in on this new league year version of the Buffalo Beat, where Bills have done many things over the last week or so. It's felt like more than just 1 week, but the Bills have said goodbye to many players. They have re-signed a few. They have extended one of their core members of the franchise. And they have also reportedly agreed to terms with a couple of external free agents. So we're here to talk about all of that with you. Any questions you might have, if this is your first live room, all you have to do is, and if you are listening live, all you have to do is just type in your question right to the message box right here on the app. And I will get to as many of them as I can throughout the next maybe hour of the day. And I'm sure there's going to be stuff that pops up throughout the hour that we'll go over if anything big does happen. But yeah, this is mostly a time to kind of talk about what has happened and maybe fast forward it to what could happen over the next week or over the next or within the draft and what it means for the draft. So by all means, any and all of your questions, be sure to fire away. All right, let's get started right away. Shane writes in, please explain the Mitch Morse cut. It seems like his new deal with the Jags was well within the price range. I think the Morse cut for them had a lot to do with the cap number they would save, because already they were on the hook for, I believe, $3 million in dead cap, even though they moved on from him. So the Mitch Morse deal, and let me look up the specifics of it, just so I have it in front of me. But conceivably, it was a 2-year deal worth $10.5 million. Essentially, that, if they were to renegotiate something along those lines, combined with the dead cap amount, it probably would have put them well over the point in which they were comfortable with doing. And he's a bit of an older player. Do they really want to be doing exactly what the Jaguars did? Because in the Jags deal, they actually put 3 void years on Morse's deal to get his cap number down in 2024. So his cap hit is, according to Over the Cap, $2,650,000. And that's a very low number, but that was fast forwarding a lot of cap space into 2026. And this is something, the idea of the offseason they were trying to avoid. So basically, the Bills looked at this, okay, it's a short-term loss for Mitch Morse, right? They move on from their long-term starting center. But I think what meant the most to them this offseason, in addition to, you know, staying competitive and making sure they had a team that could push for the playoffs and try and push for the Super Bowl this year, I think what maybe even was a little bit more of an emphasis than that was making sure that their 2025 and 2026 cap sheets weren't a total mess. And the one way they were able to go about all of this was to cut players this year rather than continue this cycle of pushing money down the line on these contracts, which they have gotten in the habit of doing over the last 2 years. Did they have to do some of that this year? Yes. Like Connor McGovern, they had to restructure Josh Allen, they had to restructure. But there are some other examples of them just getting out of cap space without ramifications toward the future. That being cutting Mitch Morse and taking on his dead cap hit this year. That being, you know, agreeing to a pay cut with Von Miller. All of these other releases outside of the Tre'Davious White one, which pushes all of $4 million to 2025, which is a lot more manageable than if they were to have to restructure all these other deals just to get cap compliant. So that is the long-winded reason why I think they felt it was in their best interest to do it. They felt maybe this was a year with a lot of these older guys into the final year of their deal, that being Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse. Tre'Davious White wasn't in the final year of his deal, but you know, he wasn't guaranteed any money. Saran Neal. Naheem Hines wasn't old, but obviously the torn ACL made that contract untenable for them. Deontay Hardy was someone that they needed to move on from for his contract alone. But they looked at this as an opportunity to go, okay, short-term loss, get some low-cost replacements in the form of David Edwards, slide Connor McGovern over to center because he's done it before in college, and see what they've got in 2024. Then in 2025, conceivably, they will have some wiggle room, some money to play around with next year, because Von Miller is going to be off the books, probably, unless he has a complete renaissance of his career. But, you know, even still, he would be going into his age 36 season, and that contract is a big one. You don't know if, you know, how long the Stephon Diggs relationship will go on, but at least by not restructuring and pushing money forward on that deal, they have left themselves the out to get out from the deal, whether it be by trade or by release next year. And they are very happy with Stephon Diggs, and I'm not saying that they are unhappy with him whatsoever, but it's about leaving yourself options in future years. So that was the big grandiose point. I know the question was about Mitch Morse itself, but he represented a bigger point to the Bills' entire offseason. All right. Unnamed writes in, Mac Hollins seems like he'll do the blocking Gabe Davis did and be a significant special teams contributor. Yeah, Mac Hollins, for those that haven't caught it yet, Mac Hollins has reportedly agreed to a 1-year deal. I have confirmed the agreement with a person briefed on the matter. So Hollins looks like he will be one of those options to be an X receiver in the Bills offense, which they lost with Gabe Davis. And Trent Sherfield was able to do that as well. And Trent Sherfield is also a free agent this year. So when you look at what they have on the depth chart now, it's Mac Hollins and Justin Shorter and Tyrell Shavers at the X receiver spot. And all of that means to me, there is still a massive void there for something significant to be added, because I would be quite surprised if they head into this season with Mac Hollins and Justin Shorter being their top two options at X receiver. They had room for a veteran receiver to add to the room, maybe even two. But with how talented this receiver class projects to be, and I've started to dig into it a little bit, I've only gotten through about four or five players of the class, but they're already, just from what I've seen, is some talent in this class. And it makes you wonder if maybe this is an opportunity to do what they did back in the year that they drafted Gabe Davis in 2020, which was to double dip at the receiver position just because it was such a talented class. They wound up with Gabe Davis. They went again for Isaiah Hodgins. They wound up having to release Isaiah Hodgins. He went on to have somewhat of a successful second go-around with the Giants, eventually fell down the depth chart there too. But it's just a point of it. To fill out the depth chart, I think a pair of rookies might be the play. So right now they've got Stephon Diggs, They've got Khalil Shakir. They've got Mac Hollins. And they've got Justin Shorter, which to me are the four at the moment that are likeliest to slot in. You know, KJ Hamler's an interesting situation, but he's never been able to stay healthy. And maybe he plays his way onto the roster. But there are two very wide open opportunities for a team, for the Bills to add a young player. And, you know, it is looking altogether likely that the Bills spend a day one or day two pick on the wide receiver position. It just, the depth chart is screaming for it. They need some youth. They need someone who can give them a little bit of yards after catch, who has some explosiveness to them. You know, they have a lot of similarities with their receiver room right now between Stephon Diggs and Khalil Shakir. And to me, they need someone that is a little bit of a different beast of a receiver. So explosiveness, able to take the top off the defense, you know, yards after catch, gaining separation, all of these different things. And there's going to be some really nice options for those. So yeah, Mac Hollins, special teams guy, I agree with you, even though you're nameless. Special teams guy can come in and block if you need him to. Although it might turn into like a, if they have him do that, it might turn into a Jake Kumerow situation where every time Kumerow came on the field, it signaled to the team, okay, it's probably going to be a running play. So you don't want to pigeonhole yourself like that, but the same time, it's a nice option to have. All right. Yard M writes in, were the price tags for AJ Epenesa and Daquan Jones more or less than you were expecting? For Epenesa, it was slightly less than I was expecting. I thought maybe he could crack the 7 to 8 million per year range and get somewhat of a substantial deal. Just because he's young, his best football has been played over the last 2 years. He seems to be ascending once he's, and anyone who digs into the history of what he's gone through in the NFL so far, you're probably like, oh, I understand why he had a slow start. I mean, comes into the NFL during the COVID year, drafted around the 280, 285 pound mark, which is what Iowa wanted him to be. Bills wanted him to drop weight. There was no off-season program, so he drops weight way too much, gets down into the 240s, and then is basically an entirely different player, is used to playing with power, doesn't know how to play with speed as a rookie, finds himself at the bottom of the depth chart, and then the next year getting up to 250, which was still nowhere close to what he is used to playing with. And then once he got up to 265 in 2022, that's when things really started to go upward for him. So just doing a brief research on his history and seeing how his pressure rates have gone up and seeing how the last couple of years in a rotational role, 6.5 sacks and, you know, being able to bat down passes on swing passes, making some impact plays. He does have some deficiencies as an edge defender against the run, but still, his pressure rate was over 14% last year, according to Pro Football Focus and True Media. So I thought there was a chance he could crack that 7 to 8 million range. The Bills got him for 6 on a 2-year deal. It was a smart deal signed by Epenesa, because if he is, in fact, an ascending player, that means, let's see, I believe he is only 25 right now. He's only 25 right now. By the time that deal expires, he will be only going into his age 28 season. So if he hits, then that gives him another crack at a bigger free agent payday. So I think it was a smart deal, stays within the system. Smart by Epenesa, smart by the Bills, smart all around. So that was a positive signing for them. The Daquan Jones one, I think, landed right where I expected it to. You know, Jones was an excellent player for them last year. I have to imagine that the second year of the deal, there's likely to be some way for the Bills to get out of it if they need to. For him, I look at he's 32 years old, turns 33 in December, was obviously an impact player for them, definitely took to the scheme well, got the, you know, helped Ed Oliver become the best version of himself. In the first four games of this past season, Jones added the pass rushing piece, and the Bills benefited from the long-term injury and the age to where they signed him to an extremely manageable contract. So yeah, he'll get a ton of money up front. I would imagine that there is some degree of them being able to get out in 2025 if they wanted to, just because he is an older player and you often don't want to go with a fully guaranteed. But, you know, maybe because it seemed like from what Daquan Jones was saying during his Zoom call with reporters yesterday, that there was another team involved and then the Bills, quote, stepped up. So maybe they had to do a little bit more for 2025 than they wanted to. But, you know, I guess we will see in the details once they come out. Those are not out yet. Cole writes in, do we think people over-exaggerate the comp pick formula? Bean isn't going to handicap himself this year for a fourth round pick next year. I don't think that it's something that will define his offseason and his free agency. But to say that it's not in the peripheral and a consideration for Bean and the Bills would not be accurate. He has talked about it openly, about wanting to get to a spot where they can get to that point. And also the offseason that they are having kind of dictates that the compensatory formula is going to be a thing. Same thing with last year. They had to dig themselves out of a salary cap hole to begin the offseason, not as much as it was this year. And they wound up with a compensatory pick for Tremaine Edmonds. And they didn't go overboard with their signings. They still made some. Like Connor McGovern was someone they brought in, and he counted against the compensatory formula. They could have ended up with more than one pick. The Bills thought they had a third round pick. All year, they were operating under the assumption that they were going to get a third-round pick for the Tremaine Edmonds thing. And they did not. They got a fourth. And I do wonder if maybe that's what pushed the Rasul Douglas trade forward in Bean's mind. Like, okay, I'm probably getting a third-round pick back for Tremaine Edmonds, so I feel comfortable with sending out a third and a fifth for a fourth and Rasul Douglas. But this year, I think it kind of pushes it forward that the compensatory formula will be used a bit just because of where they are with their cap standing. Not sure that they're going to wind up with both of the comp picks that they're projected to get for Gabe Davis and Leonard Floyd right now. There's a lot of ball game left in free agency between now and the end of the draft, which is when that the eligible signings end. So there could be some movement here, whether it be more players getting signed from the Bills that are free agents like Tyrell Dotson, who's one that stands out for that. I think he probably has the best case of all of them to get something that could qualify. But I don't think the Bills are going to let a fourth or fifth round pick dictate what they do in free agency necessarily if they can find a deal. But it's all about finding a deal and finding something that's going to be smart for them in 2025 and not put themselves too far gone from that perspective, because they did so much work this offseason with releasing the guys that they did. So yeah, it is absolutely a consideration, but not their motivation. I'll just put it like that. Sean writes in, are you surprised the Bills are not doing much at this point from players that were not a Bill? No, I'm not. I thought the re-signing portion would be their most highly emphasized of this offseason. Adding some low-cost veterans was the play. I thought maybe they had room for one big external, but that might have been taken up by AJ Epenesa. And do not discount that the Bills, and this is something that I wrote about when it happened over at The Athletic, but the Josh Allen restructure, they had an opportunity to open up about $23 million if they used all but his veteran minimum on his base salary in 2024. The entire roster bonus he was owed and the workout bonus that he's owed. If they had restructured all of that into a prorated signing bonus, they could have saved over $23 million. They chose not to do that because they didn't want to push too much money forward into future years. So they wound up saving about $16 million or so. And $7 million in cap space is notable, but it also means that they felt like they were in a good spot. So that $7 million could have meant another player. But they likely found it in their best interest, and they could still do things. They likely found it in their best interest to take a step back, not force a big signing, and figure out some cost-effective players to add to the roster to go with the core of starters that they have in place already. It's the term I've been using is a mini reset. Something I've been talking about since the offseason has started in late January, and the Bills are following through with it. So I'm not surprised that their focus has been just re-signing their own. They know what those guys can do in their system. They brought back the cost-effective ones in AJ Epenesa, Daquan Jones, and Cam Lewis. And Taylor Rapp. And now they're trying to figure out how to attack the draft and how to fill the rest of their roster. Like I said, I am not ruling out one medium-sized signing. Though I do think the Epenesa signing might have taken that one's place. But also don't rule this out. Something that Brandon Bean said off the cuff at the NFL Combine about there might potentially being some opportunities after the draft for free agency, because guys always hang around there. That might be part of their plan here. Because not only does it not impact their compensatory formula, which, like I said, is not their motivation, but is certainly something they are aware of. But at the same time, if they can hold off till June 1st, that's when the Tre'Davious White cap space becomes available, and that will give them an opportunity to sign someone that can significantly impact the 2024 roster. And that's going to be a $10 million boost. So they're kind of playing the long game, I think, with free agency here, both for future seasons and just to hold off for the immediate gratification of a free agent signing and, you know, try and figure out someone that can impact their roster with a deal in June. That would be my expectation for them. All right. Ron writes in, what's the current cap situation? This is the question I get a lot, and I'm not avoiding the question. I want you all to know that. There are just too many variables that we do not have the answer to right now as with all the contracts they're signing. We don't know the cap hit for Mac Collins. I'm assuming that's going to be a pretty low one that likely won't qualify for the compensatory formula. Nicholas Morrow, the linebacker, we don't know that one just yet. I assume the same thing with him as Hollins. We still don't know the details of the Dawson Knox reworking of his deal and how much they saved in 2024. We still don't know Deion Dawkins' full terms of his contract extension and how much that was able to open up room in 2024. We still don't know the Cam Lewis details of his deal, and we still don't know the Daquan Jones details of his deal and his cap hit in 2024. So all of those things are saying, okay, that's five different things I just listed off. No, I'm sorry, six different things I just listed off for things that we don't know. So I apologize that I don't have the exact or a ballpark of what their cap might be right now, but I just don't want to speak inaccurately more than anything. Don writes, I think all fans wanted to see Daquan Jones sign, but what other move of the Bills was your favorite so far? I don't know about favorite, but I think the most logical and the smartest one that that they made was, the Epinesa one I touched on. But outside of Epinesa, the Cam Lewis one I think makes a ton of sense because you just have so much function with him being a backup safety, your top backup nickel, one of your best special teams players that you use every single game on all four of the core four special teams units. To get him back on a 2-year deal worth $4 million, likely with a low cap number in year one, just very logical. And Cam Lewis has developed quite well at a couple of different positions. And the one thing I would not rule out is if the Bills don't have things go their way at safety, whether it be in free agency, the draft, or both, or even the second wave of free agency after June, I would not rule out Cam Lewis starting. And I know that's something that people aren't crazy about, but he's at least an option right now. An option that's familiar with the scheme, that has played safety in their scheme for the last 2 years. So that's why I thought that one was an important one for them. I could absolutely see a situation where maybe they don't sign a safety and they have Cam Lewis compete with a rookie for the starting job next to Taylor Rapp. I think the ideal situation would be if they were to sign a free agent safety that has some game to him. A free safety, not a strong safety, a free safety. I know everyone was in on, hey, why aren't the Bills going after Jeremy Chinn? Well, there's a little bit too much duplication for my taste between Jeremy Chinn and Taylor Rapp. If they were to not sign Taylor Rapp, I would have said, okay, go nuts, go for Jeremy Chinn. But to me, you want Taylor Rapp not to be in that over-the-top safety role and single high when you need him to be. I would rather have him down close to the box when you need him, trying to defend the run, than I would the opposite, because he was a step too slow when he was used back there. And I just don't think that's an ideal fit for him. So Jeremy Chinn, bigger safety. Some view him as a linebacker. Just has strong safety written all over him, just like Taylor Rapp. So that's why I was like, okay, I get why they weren't in on Chinn. All right. Shane wrote, why didn't the Bills get a third round compensatory pick for this year? That is something that I am sure Brandon Bean will be asked about at his next news conference. It's the compensatory formula is something that has been somewhat in secrecy. There is a very clear formula. Overthecap.com does a great job in breaking it down and trying to protect all of them out. The Bills themselves thought they were getting a third round pick. It wound up not being the case. I'm sure they got some sort of response from the NFL as to why that didn't happen. So I am very much expecting that he will be asked at his next media availability. Hector writes in, how do incentives work in the comp pick formula with Haaland signing up to $3 million? Would he count against it? Is the threshold still $1.67 million? Hector, so to go in the weeds of compensatory picks, the threshold is just based on the qualifying agents, free agents that were lost. And it's kind of a sliding scale every single year based on who, you know, a certain cutoff point. I think last year was around $2.5 million. Not every year is going to be the same, obviously. So to be determined about what the threshold is. How do incentives work with it? Incentives, usually when you see language in a report about a contract that uses the words up to, that usually means that those are considered to be not likely to be earned incentives. And not likely to be earned incentives do not count towards the cap. And so basically, the formula is condensed to this window of free agency opening and then post-draft. I'll double check on it, but I don't believe that even if he were to hit incentives, it would impact their formula. Could be wrong, because there are, like I said before, it's kind of shrouded in secrecy, but I don't believe that is the case. All right, next up, Jao from JP from Brazil writes in, do you think the Bills will suffer many more years to have an elite running back? I have the impression that they've lost valuable years without good personnel and now have to rebuild the defense. I think they feel okay with the running back position where it is right now with James Cook. You know, he's heading into his third season. They're going to figure out what James Cook is one way or another this upcoming year. I don't think they want to get someone that is going to stand in his way this year, because ultimately they need to make some sort of decision on him when his contract is up after the 2025 season. And paying a running back is something the Bills under Brandon Bean have not done. They've drafted to the position a whole bunch, but they have not signed someone to a large contract. That doesn't mean that they weren't interested in it. Like a couple years ago, they were interested in trading for Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey, two exceptions to the rule type of running backs that can be both a receiver and a runner that give you that versatility. That's what they're interested most in. And they think James Cook has the potential to be that. So now it's just a matter of him showing it. So I think they're going to possibly go with a low cost free agent here that ideally would not count against the compensatory pick formula, just like it did last year with Damian Harris did not count. Latavius Murray did not count. And those were the two guys that they had, along with Nyheim Hines, to be the complementary options to James Cook. Cook had a weird year where they were taking snaps away from him mid-year and giving them to Latavius Murray, which was very odd. Murray in the beginning of the year was a lot better than what he was near the end of the year, of course. But Cook also stepped his game up. So they're expecting a jump from James Cook in his third year. So I don't think they would stand in the way by adding something to jeopardize that. And they might wind up getting that elite running back from out of James Cook. It all depends on what he does in this upcoming season. And they need to allow him the space to become that player if he is going to become that player. So that's why I don't think you're going to see any big running back moves here. JP writes in, what young players do you see filling the leadership gap left by the departures of Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, Gabe Davis, and Micah Hyde twice? Well, Micah Hyde might count for twice. Seems like it's important to McDermott. And JP writes, he doesn't see any obvious answers outside of maybe Terrell Bernard. I'm just going to bring up my depth chart real quick, just so I have everyone at the top of mind. Let's see. Deion Dawkins is going to be someone that is an elder statesman within the locker room now. He obviously signed a long-term contract extension, and that is a pretty clear indicator that they expect him to do that for them. In terms of the younger players, Dawson Knox is one of those guys, probably, if he sticks around for the long term. Ed Oliver is a weirdly solid leader. I mean, he's a quirky personality, but he definitely has some fire to him, and I think guys look up to him in the locker room. Spencer Brown is someone I think has potential to develop into a leader. He has come a long way since what he was early on in his career. Had his best season by far last year in his third year. And if he sticks around for the long term, maybe he develops into that sort of role. Past that, you know, your obvious Josh Allen, Bernard was a good one. Taron Johnson, he's kind of a quieter guy, but maybe that is a role he kind of steps into because he's now the guy who has been there the longest out of the entire defensive backfield. So those are some of the ones that I would look at most here. And then, you know, maybe Connor McGovern, just because he's going into that center role, but I think it's a little bit more of Deion and Spencer Brown's personalities to kind of take over that leadership role in the offensive line room. All right, Michael wrote, are you surprised they weren't in on Jeremy Chinn? I talked about that earlier in the episode. Mark writes, why move on from Ryan Bates? Take a cap hit and go with a guy who hasn't been a center since junior year of college. For one, I think they believe in Connor McGovern more as a player than Ryan Bates. Two, I think they believe in David Edwards as more of a player and a starting option than Ryan Bates. Three, I think they have a lot of optimism about Alec Anderson, who made the team outright last year and was a healthy scratch all 17 games, or all 19 games, I should say, last year. And the last reason being, I think they wanted to get something for Bates while also getting his 2025 money off their books. So all that said, because what I talked about early on in the show, getting their 2025 cap sheet in order so that way they can do a little bit more splashy things. Maybe not like the huge free agent move like we've seen them do in the past, but being able to be competitive in the free agent market. That to me will be important to them as they get into the next iteration. A mini reset year had to happen eventually with how much their roster was aging and their cap being what it was. It was a perfect opportunity for them to do it this year. So getting Ryan Bates out of the equation, saving that cap space in 2025, getting an early fifth round pick for him, and then allowing their younger players like Alec Anderson to get into a more prominent reserve role, I think was their entire motivation there. So that's why I think Bates, they're moving on from him. They just view those three players on the roster already higher than him. And getting a fifth round pick for him was a pot sweetener for sure. Okay, we've got time for a few more here. Adam writes, Hunter Renfro to fill the Cole Beasley type role. Could that be signed cheaply? I wouldn't be surprised if they kick the tires just to see if he'll sign for cheap, but let's be quite honest about what they view for their receiver room, and that is that Khalil Shakir is their starting slot receiver moving forward. They had a three-person competition last year between Shakir, Hardy, and Sherfield. Shakir didn't shine through up until really about like week six or week seven of last year. As soon as Dawson Knox went down, that's when Shakir really, really kind of stepped it up. And from that point forward, you couldn't take him out of the lineup. So if they can get him to a veteran minimum contract where he's a backup, sure. But if not, just go get a rookie late in the draft. You don't need Hunter Renfro on your team. You have Khalil Shakir, which you believe in, and he is signed cheaply for the next two seasons. I would say just go with him. Mike writes, what's a more likely reunion, Stephon Gilmore or Trey White? It's a good one. I would say Trey White, just because he is more of a fit for their defense than Stephon Gilmore. Gilmore is more of a man cover corner, and they play a whole lot of zone. Trey White, that's part of the reason that they moved him in the first place. Trey White, if his market falls completely flat, maybe. But I don't know. I'm not optimistic that either of those are going to happen. Either of those signings are going to happen. Okay. Chris writes, can you only restructure a contract once in an offseason? If an opportunity presents itself, can they access that other $7 million on Josh's deal that they didn't take? That is a good question and something that I actually have not asked someone. My guess, and this is only a guess, just based on the logic from what I know about cap restructuring and everything like that, is that you would be able to, just because at that point in time, if it doesn't matter how it's affecting your cap, if you're paying it out, you can restructure it the way that you see fit. So that would be my guess. Don't know it 100%, but that's my logical assumption on the matter. All right. Andrew writes, all things said and done, by the time the draft is done, how many of those 11 picks do you think actually become players? I read your mock off season part two, and now expect a lot of trade-ups. Well, just look at the roster is what I would start this off with. Look at the roster before even talking about tendency. And try and find 11 spots for rookies to make the 53-man roster. It's a very difficult exercise. You can get to 8 or 9. But 11 is a couple too many. And I think it's kind of burned up Brandon Bean a little bit that he's had to cut some of his draft picks and watch them get scooped up on waivers by other franchises. Having 11 picks for Brandon Bean is like having a bunch of money with a hole in your pocket. He is, by tendency, a very aggressive day one and sometimes day two trader. We've seen him move down before, so it's not as though he hasn't done it. And we've seen him stand pat before, so it's not as though he hasn't done it. But most years, he has either moved up or looked to move up. The year they got Kyir Elam, I think especially burns him a little bit, because I think it's pretty well known that by this point that they were in on Trent McDuffie. And then when the Chiefs vaulted up to take him, it was a bit unexpected. So I don't think they want to get to a situation where they allow a very clear rival to move up for a player they covet when it would have cost them, you know, another fourth or another fifth or something like that. I don't think Brandon Bean is going to let cost get in his way in terms of trading up. So if there's someone he is very compelled by, then I could absolutely see him moving into the top 20, maybe even top 15. I'm not ruling out anything at this point. I don't think he would do anything to sacrifice his first round pick in the upcoming, or in 2025. I don't think he likes to sacrifice his future picks. He would do it for the right deal, for the right player, I'm sure. But, you know, a first rounder is kind of a tough thing to push across. Maybe a future third and later he might think about. But yeah, trading up, it's almost expected at this point. And you have to wonder what position that would be for. Wide receiver and pass rusher are looking like two prime candidates for that type of move up right now for Brandon Bean and the Bills. All right, two more. Okay. Brandon wrote, other than wide receiver, where might the Bills go in round one? Safety, guard? I think the other safety is maybe a fallback option just in case they aren't able to move up and get a guy they want. They have been able to find good safety play without premium offseason resources. So I guess never say never in terms of if the prospect is incredible. Like a couple of years ago, I thought they should have been all in on Kyle Hamilton and moving up to get him because of how good of a talent he was and how good of a fit he would be on their team. But this safety class, I'm not sure that it's worth a huge swing like that. The other position besides wide receiver is one I just mentioned, potentially defensive end. I think to me is one that stands out that they could go for in the first round. Even though they've got Greg Rousseau, even though they've got Von Miller, even though they've got AJ Epenesa, they do have some burgeoning situations here. Epenesa only signed for 2 years. Rousseau, he is heading into the final year of his rookie deal. We'll find out in May if they activate the fifth year option on him, which would pay him about $13 million, but then he would be a free agent after 2025. Von Miller likely to be a free agent after this upcoming season because his cap hit is ridiculous in 2025, and he'll be entering his age 36 season. So all of these factors mean edge rusher might be in play. So we'll see exactly what it is. I don't think guard is an option. Maybe center, but you know. I think they're going to go for premium position. And to them, premium position means receiver, defensive end. And I'm not sure there's another compelling case to make. Maybe offensive tackle, if you think you're not going to be able to pay Spencer Brown. But even then, you're using a first-round pick on a backup offensive tackle in year one. So yes, those are the two that I've got my eye on the most right now. Okay, final question. Harrison wrote, "Hi Joe, long time, first time. Back to the McDuffie Elam draft. Chiefs sniped him. We panic pick Elam. Does Beans trade up for the wide receiver to get his guy? Does Bean trade up for the wide receiver to get his guy this year? Chiefs will be on the prowl for a wide receiver this year." I think absolutely that is the most common scenario that's running rampant in my brain for this upcoming year. And it's not totally Chiefs revolved, but I mean, that specific year has to kind of stick a little bit with Brandon Bean. So, like I said before, if there is an opportunity to move up and it's a team saying, we want a fourth rather than a fifth, than the fifth that you're offering in addition to this package of picks, I don't think Brandon Bean's going to be like, you know what? Can't do it. I think Bean will go, okay, I feel good about this player and that they could turn into a superstar in my system. So I'm just going to go ahead and do this and figure out the fourth or fifth round pick later. That's his tendency. And he's one to self-scout. He's one that doesn't like to make the same mistake twice. And that, to me, would be making the same mistake twice. If they got a little cute with it, because they have as many picks as they do, to allow the order to go a little bit, thinking that they would wind up getting their guy, and then, as you put it, getting sniped by a rival like the Chiefs. So yeah, I think that might be some degree of motivation. All right, that's going to do it for me. Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. The new league year begins at 4 p.m. Eastern today, if you're listening to this live, of course. And if you're listening to this on the back end, it's just in our podcast feed. And thanks for listening, and hope you join us for our next live room, whenever that will be. So, that's it for my time. We'll see what the Bills do from this point forward. But it's a very intriguing offseason, to say the least. And we'll recalibrate to talk about the draft upcoming in the next week or so. All right. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will talk to you next episode. See you.